welcome back, and we should have Dr. Bob Thiel here, a hero both in the Christian area and the area of geopolitical analysis and functional medicine. So, Dr. Bob, what's on your radar right now?
Thanks for having me on, Dr. Bill. And actually, at this instant, I just pushed send, and you just got an email from me. So what the subject is something that I don't think we've ever talked about, and one of the parts of it is related to recent news, and that has to do with the Sanhedrin and what's going on over in Israel.
Yeah, that's very apropos because there's a lot of talk now, including this affiliate of Erdogan, that's talking as the so-called self-appointed Mahdi, that is fighting against another guy that proposes himself as a Hashemite or descendant of Moses, or sorry, of Muhammad, that this affiliate of Erdogan is saying he's going to help the Jews build a temple and also set up a caliphate in Jerusalem for all the Islamic faith to literally get rid of the extreme element and bring peace between Sunni and Shiite. These are pretty darn prophetic. So what's happening in Israel with the Jewish temple and what's going on there now?
Okay, a couple different things happened. About 2 weeks ago, just over 2 weeks ago, the reconstituted Sanhedrin announced that they have a high priest. So they've appointed this guy as a rabbi high priest person.
Yeah, he would be what's called a Kohen Gadol.
Yes, that is correct. Anyway, so they appointed this guy based on, you'll like this one, the possibility that between then and Yom Kippur, the Israeli courts or the Israeli government would allow the Jews to begin regular sacrifices. Now, I don't think that's possible before some kind of a peace deal, which probably will not happen until after some kind of a major war. But this is what they did. So they didn't have to do it, but they felt that just in the remotest possibility that by this year they could do that. So, and Yom Kippur is about 5 weeks away. I should have calculated
right,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's 4.5. It's next month on the 11th or 12th. As a matter of fact, I should I've got it in front of my face, so I should say it. It begins sunset on the 11th of October and runs to the 12th of October. And in our church, we would call it the Day of Atonement. But anyway, so they decided that they had to have a rabbi to become now the high priest just in case. Now,
there's something I want to insert here that I think you'll find interesting. I found out from my contacts of the temple complex of high priests in Israel, back and forth to Israel over the last couple of decades, that after a Shemitah or Jubilee year is when they expect to reinstitute the sacrifice. And it has to be on Sukkot, where the Temple Mount is sanctified, with the Kalal, the ashes of the red heifer, and the Kohen Gadol. So Sukkot is an extremely important date. It's the date of the projected and analyzed from biblical experts birth date of Adam and the probable birth date of Jesus based on the time period difference between 6 months exactly in the Hebrew calendar from the birth of John the Baptist on Peshah or Passover. So Sukkot, which is literally the day of tabernacling or templing, is the day when the temple has to be sanctified, and from rabbinic law, it would have to be sanctified after a restoration or jubilee or Shemitah wipeout year. So it wouldn't be surprising that they're actually projecting it now, but the conditions are not all right there because they need to have either an impending conflict that brings about a peace treaty or a level of damage and danger that's so great that peace is inevitable.
Right, and I think it's going to be this. Sadly, I think it'll be the latter more likely than the former. But
right,
But anyway, so they're talking about that now. One thing, I'm, how can I put this? I'm going to politely semi-disagree with something that you just said, and let me explain. I'm not arguing whether or not they have to do it after a Shemitah year or a Jubilee.
Yeah, I'm not saying the first year. I'm just saying after. In other words, there has to be a Shemitah first. Whether it's the first or the seventh year, I don't know. My guess is there's other conditions that need to be fulfilled before they do that, which you're pointing out.
Yeah, well, what I'm going to point out, though, is something a little beyond that. I contacted the Sanhedrin back, I think, 2008.
Right.
And I wrote them and said, hey, I've read some stuff about you. You're now back together. And just for your listeners, the Sanhedrin basically consider themselves a legislative body. kind of like in the United States, the U.S. Senate,
right?
Okay, and in the U.K. system, the parliamentary system, the House of Lords,
right?
And then the government of Israel, the normal parliament, they would consider that to be like the House of Commons or the House of Representatives in the United States. Okay, because I went through all their stuff recently when I was doing more research about them. Well, anyway, that's what they think. They think that they should be constituted that way, but they're not recognized. Hardly anybody pays any attention to them.
So, in other words, they think they have legislative power, you mean, beyond the religious power?
They kind of think it should be above the civil power.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about like a House of Lords in Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I went to their website when I was doing some more research about them, and this is kind of what they have, a system there and how it laid it out. And I could have perhaps misinterpreted it, but I'm pretty sure that's what they were saying.
Yeah, that makes sense. That they want to have a power over the state of Israel in its trajectory of international relations and its internal affairs, is what you're saying.
Well, they claim that the having the Sanhedrin is why we have a bicameral system in the United States and the U.K. He said that's why we have the two houses, and that's why the Brits have the two houses, is because of the Sanhedrin. Now, if your listeners go to the Bible, depending on which translation, they'll find the word Sanhedrin used a lot. It basically meant council, and probably most of the time it's in the New Testament, it's actually referring to a group called the Sanhedrin, at least a good part of the time. And they went away. Okay, and then one of the Jewish sages in the Middle Ages said, look, we've lost it, we don't have continuity anymore, but if enough rabbis get together and they make a deal and they decide that we're all okay, then it's okay again. So they did this about 10 years or so ago. They got together, might have been in 2004, 2006, somewhere in that range. They get together, they decide, okay, we're Jews, we're Jewish scholars, we all agree on all this stuff. Therefore, we should get together. But they're definitely a minority group over there in Israel. Okay, but they're not totally without power there. Unlike the United States, where you basically have a two-party political system. In Israel, they got a bunch of parties. And there's, I think, two or three people, and I didn't look up the exact count, from this kind of a party that's in the Knesset, the Jewish parliament. And so they have a little bit of power, and I've always wondered if the time may come when, and let's pick on you and me for a second.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to make you one Israeli political party, and I'm going to be the other political party. It doesn't matter which one. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So we're the two top parties. So somebody comes up to you from the Sanhedrin party and
right.
says, look, we really like you, Dr. Bill. We would love you to be the next prime minister. We see you don't have a majority. You know, we really want you to come in, but, you know, we have this one issue, and that is, this issue is that we want to implement sacrifices. Look, Jewish law says we could do this. Your courts have said we can do it. All we need is somebody to give us permission, and then we'll do it. And if you do this, you could be the next prime minister. So you're thinking, that's interesting.
In other words, a kingmaker. It would be like a kingmaker thing, yeah. Okay.
That's right. But you don't say yes yet because you're afraid that you might have too much backlash. You got to think about this. So they leave you, and then they come over to me. And they say, Dr. Bob, hey, we really like you. We'd like you to be the next prime minister of Israel. But, you know, we've got this one issue. You know, aren't you a Jew? Weren't you somewhat of a Jew? Your parents were? Now, in my case, of course, I'm not Jewish. But
yeah.
Okay.
This is a dialogue you're trying to create, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Bible, the Torah says about sacrifices, and so you should let us do this. And if you'll do this, we'll make you the next prime minister. And I might think, that's interesting. And probably whichever one of us would get back to them first is the one they would support. And so I think that might happen. Now, some of your listeners probably think that in order to re-implement sacrifices, that a new temple has to be built in Jerusalem. And that you're correct that is an incorrect assumption. But many on the Protestant side have said that. But there are two issues with that. One is the Bible doesn't say that. I went back and I found there's a passage. I'm going to read it for your listeners so they'll know I'm not making this stuff up. I want to read Ezra 3:6. So everybody knows what the Bible actually says about sacrifices and what the Jews really did. So let me just read this one verse. Ezra 3, verse 6. From the first day of the seventh month, and that is, by the way, what we would call Rosh Hashanah or the Feast of Trumpets. From the first day, which is coming up in the second of this month, right? Hold on, let me look at my calendar before I forget. Yeah, it starts the second at sunset and runs to the third. Okay, of October. Anyway, from the first day of the seventh month, began they to offer burnt offerings unto the Lord, but the foundation of the temple of the Lord was not yet laid. So the Jews were doing, the children of Israel were doing animal sacrifices before they rebuilt the second temple.
Right.
So this is clearly from the Bible.
Was that at the time of the tabernacle of Moses, the temple in the desert?
They also did it before they built one there, too. You're absolutely correct. And that's when the sacrifices were all mentioned, was before there was a physical temple. Okay, you've got some Jews claiming that they can't do sacrifices until they have a temple, and you have some Protestants saying that therefore they have to have a temple. But back in 2008, I think it was, I wrote the Sanhedrin, and I said, hey, I've read the Bible, I've read Ezra, I've read other things. Do you people think you have to have a rebuilt, we'll call it the third Jewish temple?
A full temple, you know, building.
Yeah, a full temple to do sacrifices. And they said, no. And then they quoted some Jewish sage and whatever. So I thought that was interesting. And the reason this is important, just because, Bill, you and I and your listeners can read Ezra 3:6 and think, well, this says the Jews can do it. Unless there are Jews, Levitical Jew types, Levitical priests within Judea who are willing to do it, it doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. They'd have to have their Jewish sages say that this quotation means what it says.
Right, and they have. And so the Sanhedrin told us that, so that was cool. Then, back in September of 2013, so just about 3 years ago, two of our sons went over to Israel. And one of our sons met with I think they both went to the Temple Institute's location there. And I'm going to talk about the Temple Institute in just a moment.
Right.
Anyway, so one of my sons came up to somebody there and said, hey, will you guys do sacrifices without a temple? And the guy's like, yes. Well, how long would it take you to do that? Oh, a few hours perhaps. They'd be willing to do it because what happened was...
Yeah, they can do it with or without a temple of meeting like the Mosaic Temple, that you have the clear things that they have all the materials, the gold rings, the sea cow skins, the brazen laver, the Holy of Holies. They got everything. They have all the material and the priesthood, and now they have the Kohen Gadol, the head of the Sanhedrin. They're ready. There just needs to be the final few little, as they say, tweaks on the icing on the cake, and they're ready.
Well, back in 2009, they finished kind of the last piece, and that last piece was that they actually were able to come up with an altar of unhewn stones.
Uh-huh.
And they have this thing that they take apart and put back together. It's a little bit heavy, but they would just pull it and drag it to wherever they think they need to do the sacrifices.
Yeah.
So they have what it takes in order to do this. Now, as you indicated, they've got a situation with a red heifer as well.
They also have the kalal, by the way, from the Dead Sea, from Qumran.
Well, anyway, they claim to have a red heifer, and this is about the time that this red heifer that they've been looking at for the last couple of years would be appropriate for slaughter.
Right.
But they haven't done it yet, but they do have all that. Well, anyway, so I told you, so our sons went over to Israel. Well, I had wanted to do some other research that they were not able to do. So I went for the first time ever to myself to Israel the next month. So I was there in October of 2013. And while I was there, I also went to the Temple Institute. And I must have got somebody who was a bit more guarded with his words than our son Michael did. But so I'm talking to this guy, and I'm trying to get him to admit that the Temple Institute's position is that as soon as they get permission, they'll go ahead and they'll do the sacrifices. They don't need a temple. They don't need anything else. And he finally said, he tried to quote a few things. And so I said, okay, so that means this, right? And he finally said, yes, that's what it means. I guess for some reason, he didn't think he was an official enough spokesperson, but he was the guy that I was talking to, and he was dressed kind of like the rabbis and stuff. They are dressed. I didn't ask him what his title was. But it was at the Temple Institute, and he confirmed that. So just so your listeners realize, the Jews are ready. And I realize it's only a fringe of them, but they only need a fringe of them. Now, they claim to have like 100-some scholars that back their Sanhedrin. And the guy who set up the Temple Institute, he also is a member of the Sanhedrin. Okay, so there's a connection there. Now, they've got some unusual ideas. They've got some idea that the stone that Jacob's head was on when he saw the vision of the angels coming up and down from heaven to earth or something, that that's actually below where the temple was, and the temple should be put back up on top of that. And they got some other unusual
well, that, by the way, that Jacob's pillow stone was taken off to Scotland by the Scots sometime
I've seen
ago.
It.
What?
I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, I think it's still, if I remember correctly, is it still in Edinburgh Castle?
I think so. When I saw it, it was in Westminster Abbey.
Oh, yeah. But I know the Scots retook it. In fact, right. An expert on it is our co-host on the Tuesday and Thursday third hour shows, Tim Alexander, who also has a title as one of the lords of the British House of Lords. So he knows these things as a member of the genealogy group in England. Even though his family were patriots and were the first fighters for independence in America against the Brits, the fact is that this pillow thing, I don't know why is the pillow thing coming back, that they want to have Jacob's pillow back there, you know, because...
Well, in Scotland, you mean?
Why do the Jews want the pillow back in order to reconstitute the temple? What's?
Well, they think it's there. They don't think. Okay, they don't. Okay, they don't think.
Oh, they don't think it's been taken away.
Okay.
So in other words, it's the multiple pillows thing, just like the multiple Ark of the Covenant, because a lot of the Jews think there's an Ark of the Covenant that's still under the Temple Mount.
Right.
They don't believe it was taken away to Aksum, Ethiopia, and that there's a church down there that still believes they have the Ark of the Covenant, and they actually have Christian ceremonies about the Christians in Ethiopia that they have the Ark and have since before Jesus, which goes back to the Ethiopian son of the Jewish king
Solomon. Yeah, they claim it was related to that. I have tried to prove whether or not it's possible that the Ark is in Ethiopia. I'm not convinced that it's there. When I did some more research on that, I'm not convinced. Speaking of not convinced, something else I wanted to discuss here, too. This is something it would be interesting to do, because I don't know your position on this, and I don't have a strong position on what I'm going to ask you. And that is, was the first and second temple actually on the Temple Mount?
No, it wasn't. And I can tell you, for all the research that I've done, the Temple of Antonius had 10,000 Roman soldiers. The Wailing Wall is not a wall of the temple. The temple was
correct.
At the Springs of Gihon, which is below the Eastern Gate, which is a territory that's completely under the control of the Jews, so they don't need to take away or remove the Church of St. Catherine's, which became the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which has the Abrahamic stone on the Temple Mount. That Al-Aqsa Mosque is where the Abrahamic stone is, where Isaac was going to be sacrificed. But the temple was built where they had a water source, a spring called the Spring of Gihon, to wash the libations of the sacrifices. So there's no evidence whatsoever, and I've talked and listened to many experts on this, and I fully believe that the Temple Mount is not at all. It's above the Springs of Gihon. It's not where the actual temple was. As it says, I think the Roman historian basically said that not stone was left on another. In fact, it was so demolished, you wouldn't even think it was a sign of demolition. It was so demolished, it was not even a sign. There was even a sign of demolition there. No evidence of even a previous building. That's how thoroughly the Romans had destroyed it.
We'll talk about it.
While the large majority of Americans have never heard of cryptocurrency, it is the medium of exchange of the future that has already begun. On the other hand, the large majority of RBN listeners are very aware of the corruption within the Fed and the trillions in counterfeit money and credit it has created. Well, would you like to do something about this? OneCoin, the fastest growing company of any kind in world history, will pay you to help do away with the Federal Reserve. Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he surely developed many great improvements in the industry. In 1927, talking pictures made silent movies obsolete overnight, and email has practically done away with the need for a fax machine. With cryptocurrency, Bitcoin became the pioneer in 2009, but now OneCoin, as the first ever gold-backed cryptocurrency, has moved to the top of the industry in only 2 years, and its impact on the financial world could be devastating to the Fed. Bill Gates and Richard Branson and all the jillionaires are already acknowledging that this system of paying for goods and services is becoming what will be recognized as the new worldwide reserve currency. For more information, call Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911. Again, that's Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Are you tired of brown rust stains on your toilets, sinks, and clothes? Does your water smell and taste bad? Don't live with these problems anymore. HydroCare's revolutionary well water systems, available at Wave Home Solutions, gives you clean, healthy, great-tasting water from every faucet. They remove iron, hydrogen sulfide, sediment, and many other contaminants that are distasteful and damaging your fixtures. You'll be amazed how fresh and clean well water can be. Satisfaction guaranteed. Go to bestwater123.com. That's bestwater123.com.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Remember who the expert was. It's Bob Cornuke in the Temple location.
I know of him. He did a lot of research based on the late Ernest Martin.
Dr. Ernest Martin, very, very good. We do have a caller, and then we'll get on to your other comments.
Okay.
And caller is Patricia in Florida, the Ark of the Covenant. Go ahead, Patricia, you're right.
I'm not sure if you're aware of the discoveries that were made years and years ago by Ron Wyatt.
Oh, yes. And in fact, I've had Ron Wyatt on my show many years ago. Many years ago. And Ron Wyatt, I actually know his friends. In fact, one of his friends that knows Ron personally is Johnson Gray, and he can actually provide corroborating evidence about Ron's discoveries. So when he's on next week in the third hour, if you want to call in, you can ask those questions directly to Johnson Gray, who's an ancient archaeologist. And he's probably traveled to some of the same sites as Ron.
Well, the thing is, the downtake of the video that I saw, which was original video or original stuff, was that God didn't want the world to know yet where it is, and it was covered up and put back. But it was definitely discovered, and they did he invented a special kind of electron microscope to look at the drops of blood that were found on the ark. So this is fascinating. I'm surprised you didn't come up.
But yeah, I know about that. I just haven't brought it up in the topics, but we can talk about that next week if you'd like, when we have Jonathan Gray on and get into more specifics.
What day would that be?
Next Wednesday, hour number 3, which is okay. Between 2 and 3 Central Standard Time, next Wednesday.
Yeah, I try to listen to your show, but sometimes I get interrupted, so thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so what do you think, Dr. Bob?
The Ark of the Covenant.
I don't have a firm system.
Yeah,
I've seen evidence that supposedly in the Temple Mount or it's an Oxum. I don't really know. I'll do one thing. I don't think it's necessary for the Ark to show up to start the sacrifice. I didn't see anything that indicates the Ark has to be present for the sacrifice to start.
No, I don't believe that's at all necessary. But I will comment that there's a Catholic prophecy that they think that Enoch and Elijah or something like that will appear, or the two witnesses will appear once the Ark of the Covenant is found.
That deals with the prophecy that goes to Revelation 10, and when they talk about Enoch and Elijah, they're basically referring to maybe like John the Baptist, Enochian or Elijah type prophetic people. It doesn't necessarily mean the actual ancient prophets are going to reappear in the physical or spiritual flesh, because you know when Jesus.
Under the Catholic prophecy, that's what they think. But so that's something related to that. Well, anyway, getting back to the other points we were making before the break, before we took the call,
right?
And that is, I've tried to do some research, and I was over in Israel, and I spent a lot of time at the Western Hill over in Israel, and there was a Jewish rabbi who came up to me. I was kind of wondering basically what I was doing over there. And it's an interesting location because on this Western Hill, the original church building, at least the original one in Israel that anybody's found, was in Jerusalem. It was on this Western Hill.
Right.
Now, it didn't look like the modern buildings you'd see from, let's say, the Roman Catholic or the Eastern Orthodox. It basically was rectangular in shape, and it looked like a... It kind of looked like a synagogue, and in terms of how it looked, my wife and I once went to one time we were in Rome. We went to the church of Santa Pudenziana, and in that they have a mosaic on the wall. Now this was basically a painting, if you will, of what Jerusalem looked like in the late 4th century.
Right.
This is the only picture that we have, the only picture we've got, and it shows both buildings. It shows the original Church of God on Jerusalem's Western Hill, and next to it, the original building that the Constantinians built. Okay, so theirs was rounded because it kind of was because of the sun, and the original church building was different. And I hear your break before I can even explain why this is relevant to the temple. I hear your bumper music.
Keep that thought. We'll be right back, and we won't interrupt you when we return. And when you're out there without care, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
As a regular listener to Republic Broadcasting, you certainly understand the times and circumstances that we are living in. You certainly understand that the good times are over, and you certainly understand what we are heading for. Though we do not know what exactly is going to happen, we must assume that it's going to be a disaster. Are you prepared for that mess? Go to www.bugoutpanama.net and get the necessary information on our growing community of awake and prepared individuals, just like you. At www.bugoutpanama.net, you will learn how we are preparing on our farm, Finca Baiano, for what is coming. Emigrate while you still can to our village, where survival is of the utmost importance. Prepare. Don't despair. at www.bugoutpanama.net.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
So you're caught right in the middle of a thought. Please continue and restate that thought and analysis, Dr. Bob.
Okay, well, we were talking about a building on the Western Hill in Jerusalem. And I want to talk a little bit about the temple and tie this into modern archaeology and what some people are thinking and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So people understand what might happen in terms of animal sacrifices and prophetically. Anyway, back in the book of Matthew, chapter 24, verse 2, I'm going to read this from the New King James. It says, "And Jesus said to them, 'Do you not see all these things? Assuredly I say to you, not one stone will be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down.' Now, I've been to Jerusalem, and the parts by where the old temple were, there are all kinds of stones still there. As a matter of fact, they excavated part of it, and there's a big, humongous wall going down. Now, some preterist types try to tell you, these are people who think the book of Revelation's already happened, the Great Tribulation's already happened, and all this nonsense. They tell you that this has already happened, but I'm seeing all these rocks and stones and said, no, this doesn't even look like it's the right place. Well, it turns out that, and this is something you mentioned on the break, that people who were there at the time, for example, like the Jewish historian Josephus, said there was nothing there.
Yeah, in fact, it was so demolished that it was not even a sign that a demolition had occurred, because the Romans not only broke every stone down, they removed all the debris, so it was literally like, we call it virgin land. It was almost like nothing had ever been there.
Right. And so you've got people who are going around every now and then and saying, for example, like last week, they said, we found these tiles. We found these Herodian tiles. These are in the court where Jesus overthrew the money changers. Jesus may have walked on these and all this stuff.
There's no evidence of that. None.
Of course not. And they know there's no evidence of that. But here's, you know, the Bible says in Romans 3:4, let God be true, but every man a liar. So I talked to a biblical archaeologist I knew yesterday about some of this stuff in some depth. And I said, look, one of the issues with the tiles and where the old temple was is the archaeology type people mostly say it had to be on the Temple Mount, because they found certain things at Temple Mount from time to time. But they haven't actually found anything that proves the temple was there. Okay?
Now, the problem... How can they make a non-consistency? If they had ever taken philosophy courses in inductive and deductive logic, they'd realize if you don't have that basis, you can't be a good scientist, a good writer, or a good historian. You can't say those things that are completely inconsistent. It's not possible.
Well, so they go out and they claim that, for example, you mentioned Robert Kornacki or Dr. Ernest Martin.
Right.
Now, I think both of them have some flaws in their writings, okay? So I'm not going to defend parts that are indefensible. But their basic position was, look, this is what Jesus said. And then you got Josephus, who was basically an eyewitness, who said, look, this stuff's not there. So you won't find any archaeological evidence that it was there, wherever it was, because it wasn't there. But they keep finding archaeological evidence in the Temple Mount. Okay?
Yeah, it's so, not possible. It's the fortress of Antonius. It's where 10,000 Roman soldiers had their fortress. I mean, it's not a Jewish site.
It looked like a fortress to me when, again, they had uncovered what ended up being a dump. And you see how far that wall went down. It looked pretty militaristic to me, and I was once in the military. Anyway,
right.
So you've got the situation where all the stones were thrown down, etc. But Jesus didn't say that the stones that were thrown down would be necessarily destroyed. He didn't say anything other than, they're all going to be, see this, all these stones are going to be knocked down. And they were.
Right.
Well, interestingly, the building that I was mentioning a couple of breaks ago, that's on the Western Hill, has what they call ashlars. Now, ashlars are big stones. I'll use American terms.
About
2.5
stone.
Feet.
Yeah,
about 2.5 feet.
Yeah.
By about 2 feet and about, maybe a foot or so thick. They're pretty heavy stones.
Right. So these are temple stones, probably from the original temple, hauled away from the site and built this church, is what you're saying.
That's correct. And there are the foundation stones for the church, and there's some on the side of the walls. Now, because of the Crusades and everything, all kinds of stuff got destroyed and rebuilt. But some of the original stones are there. The foundation stones are there. And I've done research on that. Now, I sent you some links, and one of them should talk about the Church of God in Jerusalem's Western Hill, also called the Cenacle, or Cenaculum, depending on how you pronounce it or where you're from.
Right.
So that'll go into that.
And by the way, Cenaculum, the Pope has been trying for years, several different popes, to get the Cenaculum under the control of the Vatican. You heard about that right?
Yes. Let me tell you more than that. Not only that, when I was over there, this Jewish rabbi comes up to me and said, look, this used to be our building. We gave it to the government of Israel. And this is a rabbi who called himself Goldstein.
Right.
He came up to me and he said, look, we gave it, our group, the diaspora, we gave it to the government of Israel under the condition they could never give it away to one religious group. In other words, they didn't want it to go to the Catholics or the Muslims.
Right.
Now, the reason the Muslims would be interested in it, by the way, is one, the Muslims conquered it a couple of times, and as you've indicated before, in terms of Islam, if Islam had it once, they own it. It doesn't matter if they lost it in between.
Right, but and that's why, the way the Church of St. Catherine's has in Islamic scripture that God had no son, and they say blasphemous things that Jesus, and this is written in Arabic, in the Arabic script, that Jesus was the illegitimate bastard of a Roman soldier, and it's right around the stone of Abraham in the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the original church, which would be St. Catherine's, and they have a roped-off area where the stone is still sitting there, the stone of Abraham about to sacrifice Isaac before God presented him the sacrificial animal. So people need to think because that stone is up there on the grounds outside the temple, the we call the Fortress of Antonius, they think that somehow because that's there, that's where the temple was. There's no evidence of that at all. But
right.
That's the guy who told me this, by the way, was the chief master stonemason, Nicolas Saliba, that God had actually shown me and told me his name 3 weeks before we even went to Israel in 1992. So I knew Nicolas' name, and he came up to me on a Friday after we were told to go to the Temple Mount area. And Nicolas literally walked up and said, God showed me you in a vision. My name is Nicolas Saliba. And he brought us, and he told us all about these things about the temple of, you know, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And he told us about the temple, too, and about the Cenaculum.
Well, getting back to the Cenaculum itself, so this rabbi contacts me while I'm there, and I talk to him. He calls me on the phone a few times. Well, I tell him, I said, you know, the Vatican wants it. And I told him this in person. I told him on the phone when I was back in the States.
Right.
And he's like, whatever. And then I said, no, you don't understand. They really want it.
And they're desperate. That's the number one out of 40 sites that we're still trying to get. In fact, the recent death of Mr. Shimon Peres, or near death, I guess he's dying of a stroke.
Yeah, he wasn't dead this morning.
He's not dead yet. He's actually in a controlled coma, but he's dying. But he's been one of the primary forces over the last 40-plus years trying to get the Cenaculum. The Vatican, he's actually working to have to coordinate the transfer to the Vatican, and he hasn't succeeded.
Well, anyway, so I contact this Jewish leader that I know over there, and lo and behold, about 2 weeks after, I tell him, look, they're really serious about this. I see his picture in the news. He led a group of Jewish protesters, basically to tell the government of Israel, look, you're not taking this away from us.
Right.
Pope Francis wants this for a couple of reasons.
Oh, yeah.
One of the reasons is for his ecumenical agenda, because it's an area that's got some reverence by the Muslims. And the Jews, by the way, consider that David's tomb is there. If you go to Israel, if you go to Jerusalem, you'll see a kind of a goldish-looking statue. It's supposed to be David. And so they've got something you can go under and see that. So they've got the three religions, or their version of the three religions, because the Catholics, of course, have been controlled it off and on since the 4th century. They want it because of its ecumenical significance, as well as the Church of Rome would like to tell everybody that they are the original church, even though their buildings don't look like that. They don't have the same teachings that the original church did back then, etc. But so they've got two particular reasons that they really want it bad, and they've tried to, they actually basically threatened the Jews a couple of years ago. What I read in the news was basically, listen, Israelis, if you give us this, we're going to support you. If you don't give us this, we're going to support the Palestinians.
And by the way, they have supported the Palestinians.
Yes.
In fact, this Pope Francis has stated publicly in the last year he wants to support the generation of a Palestinian state. Now, I'm going to make a brief statement here, but it's very important for people to listen closely. The abomination that desolates is a very important statement about the setting up of the sacrifice in the 7-year period of false peace. It has to occur on Sukkot by rabbinic law. Number two, it has to mean the building of a chunk of territory given over to a potential enemy of the State of Israel. Even though the State of Israel itself is in the form of apostasy, God's refounding them and returning to the land like a fig tree without fruit. And what the abomination is a blood sacrifice that abominates against the blood of Yeshua, Jesus, the Father in the flesh. So the abomination is the Jews starting a blood sacrifice again. And the desolation means it has to be tied to the setting up of a Palestinian state. And this Vatican has pushed for both. He's pushing for the blood sacrifice to start and a Palestinian state. So he wants to be the ultimate peacemaker, setting this final stage for the blood sacrifice, which is an abomination, and the desolation of the Palestinian state.
Well, I'm not convinced that's what the actual abomination desolation is going to be, but I do agree with you that the objective that he's got to put the Palestinians in there.
I'll explain a little bit more deeply. The abomination has to be something that abominates the Most High God, because people don't realize you can't sin against man or nature. You can only sin against the Creator. David proved that. That's why he was a man after God's heart, because he knew when he even put Uriah out in the battlefield to be killed, he didn't sin against Uriah. He did evil against Uriah, but he sinned against the Creator God. And when David repented, he didn't repent to Uriah, he repented to the Creator. the abomination has to be something so vile that it actually it literally violates the perfect sacrifice of Yeshua that wiped out the opened the pathway to God again. And the second thing, it has to desolate, which means you take away some of the Abrahamic territory given to Abraham to be passed on to the restored state that eventually would take control of the territory from the Euphrates River all the way through to the Nile and all the way through to the Red Sea. That territory was supposed to become the lands of the state of the restored state of Israel, which is many times larger than the current state. We have a tiny sliver of land that's not even the size of Rhode Island. And the desolation is to, and this is ancient Hebrew law, and I've actually talked to rabbis about this, the desolation has to be the giving over of territories to a potential enemy. That's what it means, a desolation, meaning you've lost land to an enemy. So the abomination has to be something that abominates against the blood sacrifice of God by starting a blood sacrifice of animals, which cannot take away sin, which the Jews believe, because remember in Kol Nidra law in Hebrew and in Yom Kippur, they do the blood sacrifice because they say it opens up a pathway to God again when Yeshua Jesus, the Father in the flesh, opened that pathway, and no man or no blood sacrifice is necessary to do that anymore. So the ultimate abomination is to do a blood sacrifice not accepting the Messiah. So it's basically a sign gift that we have not accepted you, the God of the universe, coming in human flesh, that takes away the wall between us and the Creator God so God can reach down to mankind to resurrect it. Every other religion thinks that people can become good enough, whether you're a Buddhist or a transhumanist or any other religion can be good enough for God. And God says, all you have to do is Shema, hear and do my will, and I will make you good in my eyes. And David showed that pathway, even though he did great sin, when he repented to the Creator God, God accepted his repentance, even though he brought judgment. And his son, the kingdom was split after the death of Solomon. And he lost his first son, who was a firstborn, with his wife, because it was a judgment. So he died. The child died in childbirth. So people need to know that you can only sin against God, not against nature or mankind or anything else, only against the Creator. And that's why the abomination had to be a sin against the Creator and the ultimate blood sacrifice.
I absolutely agree the abomination will be a sin against the Creator, and it will involve being in some place people aren't going to be.
Right, and it's going to be. It's also going to be so obvious, especially because we're mentioning it in advance, it'll be so obvious that everybody will know that a great violation has occurred. And those who are, we call, Messianic Christians, whether they're from Russia or previously Khazars or whatever, Mongolians, it doesn't matter, they will understand that a great evil has been done where we've given territory to Muslims, which is a satanic religion, and cooperation with the Vatican and this new amalgam super world religion, and it also has been abominated, basically said the Messiah never came, which Islam teaches, that he returns as Isa and is a Muslim and is to behead Christians if they don't convert to Islam. That's what Islam teaches. So anybody who says they're a moderate Muslim, this is a core teaching of Islam, which is an abomination. And when we make this final peace treaty with Islam and the Mahdi, who's going to bring peace between Sunni and Shiite, it also involves setting up the caliphate in Jerusalem, not in Istanbul. And it means setting up the, which is what this affiliate of Erdogan has stated. So the abomination of desolates, and this is not my opinion, this is the thus saith the Lord, and I've spoken this truth since the late 90s when I traveled with the Prophecy Club, is the blood sacrifice and the setting up of a Palestinian state. That's how evil this is, because it's not just setting up a state, it's setting up a state where the new world religion is an amalgam between Christianity and all these other religions and Islam. And the new world order is a collaboration between the globalist, corporatist, satanic cabal and Islam. That's what people need to understand. The fastest growing population on earth are Muslim. Everybody else, their populations are shrinking. Japanese, European, even American. If it wasn't for immigration in Canada, their population would continue to shrink because they abort so many babies. What's going on is Islam is growing like crazy, like weeds.
Well, to get back to one other point we somewhat disagree with, but probably not once I explain this next part.
Right.
Scripture is clear that there are going to be two groups of Christians at the end.
Right. Christians who know what's going on and Christians who do not know what's going on. You can see about the two groups in Revelation 12, verses 14 through 17.
Right.
But because of that, and because when Jesus made his statement in Matthew 24, 15 about the holy place, and in parentheses it says in most Bibles, let he who reads understands. The implication is then that all Christians who read this will not understand. So I'm not convinced, Dr. Bill, that even most Christians will understand when the abomination of desolation.
Oh, of course they won't. Of course they won't. There's going to be what's called the calling out. They mention a number, but I don't believe it's absolute, of 144,000. And they also mention the tribal names. And each tribal name signified a stone on the breastplate of the high priest that prevented the piercing arrows of Satan to the soul to keep you in a relationship with God. And so what it means is there's going to be the called out ones, the bride, if you want to call it, that are fully in communication with God and know that these are the times and that Messiah is coming. And there'll be those, there'll be what we call Laodicean Christians.
Right, is that right? It's the Philadelphian Christians that get protected, Laodiceans.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com.
While the large majority of Americans have never heard of cryptocurrency, it is the medium of exchange of the future that has already begun. On the other hand, the large majority of RBN listeners are very aware of the corruption within the Fed and the trillions in counterfeit money and credit it has created. Well, would you like to do something about this? OneCoin, the fastest growing company of any kind in world history, will pay you to help do away with the Federal Reserve. Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he surely developed many great improvements in the industry. In 1927, talking pictures made silent movies obsolete overnight, and email has practically done away with the need for a fax machine. With cryptocurrency, Bitcoin became the pioneer in 2009. But now OneCoin, as the first ever gold-backed cryptocurrency, has moved to the top of the industry in only 2 years, and its impact on the financial world could be devastating to the Fed. Bill Gates and Richard Branson and all the jillionaires are already acknowledging that this system of paying for goods and services is becoming what will be recognized as the new worldwide reserve currency. For more information, call Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911. Again, that's Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
And Dr. Bob, how do they obtain your books, which are pretty important? As I say, we agree on most, I'd say 90, 95% of all of these things. And the other areas, we're just still seeking. And some things we know are, thus saith the Lord. Other things are historically pretty factually supported. That, for example, Bob Cornuke's theory that the Temple of Antonius was not the site of the temple. And in fact, this Cenaculum is built from these giant stones that actually came from the temple, which is why there was no debris on the temple site, which was at the springs of Gihon below the eastern gate. I think there's a ton of evidence that tells us that when the Jews are now calling for a start of the sacrifice, which you've done research today, that means they've now reconstituted the Sanhedrin and have the Kohen Gadol, which is the high priest. They're ready. I mean, I don't know what sign they need next, but I don't know what sign they need next, but we're literally seeing all of the chessmen on the board ready to make a move.
Right. That's correct. As far as the books, actually, well, this makes it easier for listeners. I have articles at the cogwriter.com website, cogwriter.com website.
Right.
And I mentioned that one because articles about what we talked about were there, but there are also links to the books, like Hillary Clinton Prophecy and Destruction of the United States, Fatima Shock, to mention two that come to mind that are there, plus booklets on church history and the church in general. But on the stuff we're talking about, as far as the temple, the original church building, the Sanhedrin, we have that there. We also have videos on most of these. These are all free, by the way. And of course, the commercial books you can buy, but almost everything there is not commercial at all. We don't try to sell you anything. There's no other ads. This is how my books are listed.
And by the way, if your church gets started down here, or even a home church, I want to attend to it. I won't attend most churches, because if a church doesn't do three things: number one, get relevant to the political environment in the area and in your country; number two, speak about prophecy; and number three, become a salt and light to the civilization, which means to stay interactive with other people and confront evil. And unfortunately, most churches aren't doing those three things. It's really disturbing.
We try to confront evil all the time. We run into it, unfortunately, so often.
Right, and the problem is most churches are either what I call happy churches, or make you feel good, or treat God like he's a vending machine, when he's really trying to speak to us in circumstances, in dreams and visions and language, and even the evil politicians we elect, like Obama. The very fact that America is willing to elect an evil person like Hillary Clinton, with her list of crimes so long anybody else would have spent many decades in prison for, and she's getting a free pass, means that we're at a point now where, you know, when I hear that people say, well, why do you want to elect Hillary? Because she's a woman. There's lots of great women who would make excellent presidents, but not this woman. This is a very dangerous person, and people have to understand, and this is about the health issues. I put a video 2.5 weeks ago, and I've got over, I think, 2,400 hits already just on YouTube, and I also put it up on Vimeo. What you have to understand is that she's not medically stable. Even 30% of Americans don't believe she'll be alive in 2020 on Drudge. I believe she won't be alive in a year. I mean, I think that she's in the end stages of Parkinson's disease and other health problems.
See what happens to her.
Yeah. I know that Trump is being wise not to make comments, but Dr. Bill will. Thank you, Dr. Bob. We'll have you back in 2 weeks, Wednesday. Would that be good?
If it's the same time, sure. That should work out.
Same time, 2 weeks from now. And an amazing show today. I really appreciate it. Again, visit cogwriter.com, cogwriter.com. And you can get his books at Amazon.com. Just put Dr. Bob Thiel, T-H-I-E-L, T-H-I-E-L, and you'll get all his amazing books. Coming in tomorrow, first hour, we hope to track down and have Leo Zagami and hear his comments on all these issues. And amazing shows planned for you to inform you, empower you, and bring you closer to God and have peak health.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822.
877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.